Ukrainian army.
At first, I received a lot of like hate comments, hate in general. Then I received also harassment, and then from different people like pursued me. They published my phone number, all my private information. They even published an address of a flat that where I used to live.
While Julian Assange faces the prospect of spending the rest of his life in jail, he is not the only journalist under threat of imprisonment for telling the truth. Alina, like many other independent journalists, have been deplatformed from some social media outlets and has had her PayPal account suspended. Anti-war sites Consortium News and Mint Press have also had their PayPal accounts suspended in an attempt to cut off funding. The job of a journalist is to uncover stories so that society can debate and implement policy based on their findings. Now, while mainstream outlets don't even send reporters to this part of Ukraine, the few Western reporters who are here risk their lives and their reputations to uncover important truths. For that, they risk being deplatformed, smeared, or sent to jail simply for doing their job. There's increasingly a worrying campaign by tech companies, governments, and courts to strangle anti-war dissent in the West. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
In the limelight. In the U.S., Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has overtaken Donald Trump as the favorite to win the 2024 election, as the former president's chances appear to have been affected by the January 6 hearings, according to betting market data. The article you're about to hear has been written by Newsweek journalist Ewan Palmer. The piece is titled, Ron DeSantis Now Favorite for 2024 as Donald Trump Hurt by January 6 Hearings. The article has been published by Newsweek. In the United States, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has overtaken Donald Trump as the favorite to win the 2024 election, as the former president's chances appear to have been affected by the January 6 hearings, according to betting market data. The Florida governor is currently listed as having a 22% chance of winning the next election, with Donald Trump on 20%, and current President Joe Biden behind both potential GOP candidates on 14%, according to odds under Smarkets betting exchange. Ron DeSantis' chances have rapidly improved over the past few months. In November, he was considered the fourth favorite to be the next president, behind Donald Trump, Joe Biden, and Vice President Kamala Harris. Even by mid-June, Donald Trump was listed by Smarkets as having a 12% better chance of becoming the next president than Ron DeSantis, 25% to 13%. However, it appears the recent damning testimony from Cassidy Hutchinson during the House Committee's hearings on the January 6 attack have damaged Donald Trump's hopes of returning to the White House. Cassidy Hutchinson, a former top aide to the former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, made some of the biggest bombshell claims of the hearings around the insurrection so far during her 26th of June testimony. These include that Donald Trump was aware that some of his supporters were armed on 6th of January 2021, but still ordered them to the Capitol, as they're not here to hurt me. Cassidy Hutchinson also relayed conversations she heard from Mark Meadows, stating that Donald Trump doesn't care that his supporters were chanting "Hang Mike Pence" at the Capitol, because he believed the then Vice President, Mike Pence, deserved it. The former White House aide also testified that Donald Trump allegedly grabbed the steering wheel of the presidential SUV to force his way to the Capitol as the riot was unfolding, and then attacked a Secret Service agent who tried to restrain him. Since Hutchinson's revelations, Donald Trump has fallen behind Ron DeSantis, with bookmakers having led the Florida governor by 9 percentage points just a week ago. The continued rise of Ron DeSantis has now resulted in the Republican becoming favorite to win the 2024 presidential election, Matthew Shadick, SmartCast's head of political markets, said in a statement to Newsweek. Donald Trump's stock has been on the slide in the recent weeks, and the January 6th congressional hearings may be having some impact. Whilst the latest prices make him odds on to run for the White House again, it's now looking like he may face serious opposition from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. BetOnline is currently listing Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis as joint favorites to become the next president, with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in third and fourth place. According to a recent Politico website report, Ron DeSantis has viewed the January 6th hearings as a way to get Trump indicted, which could block the former president's attempts to run in the 2024 presidential race and pave the way for the Florida governor to enter the White House. GOP donors are also said to be getting sick of the show surrounding Donald Trump and are looking to support other candidates like the Florida governor, according to a close DeSantis advisor. While DeSantis's polling has improved in recent months, including beating Trump in a University of New Hampshire survey center in June, Trump is still far and away the favorite to clinch the GOP nomination should he choose to run for office again. According to a collection of national surveys since November of 2021, compiled by Polling USA, as of 16th of June, Donald Trump's average polling stood at 55.3%, while Ron DeSantis is a distant second place at 19.3%. Meanwhile, Donald Trump on Sunday targeted conservative columnist Peggy Noonan, claiming she's among the pundits who don't understand MAGA politics or Make America Great Again politics. In a Wall Street Journal opinion editorial on Thursday, Peggy Noonan wrote that the January 6th hearings are sinking Donald Trump and not helping President Joe Biden either.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The International Federation of Journalists, or IFJ, says the Federation will be a partner in the lawsuit filed against the Israeli occupation in the International Criminal Court. A member of the executive board of the Federation says the move came after the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate succeeded in persuading the Federation to file a lawsuit against Israel in the International Criminal Court. IFJ stated that the filing comes in light of the Israeli aggression against Palestinian journalists and people. Earlier, the Journalist Syndicate had said that it succeeded in exposing Israel's acts of aggression against media professionals and the Palestinian people. The circumstances of Shirin Abu Akleh's killing on May the 11th have been investigated by several international organizations. All concluded that it was a bullet fired from an Israeli rifle that killed the Al Jazeera correspondent and injured her fellow journalist as they covered an Israeli raid in Jenin. Multiple witnesses also agreed with the probes, stating that Israeli forces shot the veteran Palestinian reporter. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera and its host country Qatar pointed the finger at Israel from the outset. But the question is, will there and can there be accountability for the crimes committed by Israel?
And the absence of punishment shows hypocrisy, double standards, and deception and lies. So this is an opportunity for journalists to present all of the best documented evidence, research, discovery that they've done about crimes against humanity that the Israeli apartheid regime has committed. And the more international they go, the louder they go, the more they invite other countries to be participants, to join the lawsuit against Israel, the more you're building international consensus in support of the people who have been violated, dehumanized, killed, robbed, or in other way injured by this grotesque apartheid Israeli policy and agenda of genocide, bigotry, and destruction. So it's a very essential step, and I'm glad they're taking it.
Earlier this month, Palestinian officials handed over to U.S. forensic experts the bullet that killed Abu Akleh. But despite all the evidence pointing fingers towards Israel, the U.S. said it could not reach a definitive conclusion on the origin of the bullet. Meanwhile, Abu Akleh's family have expressed their anger over the U.S.'s disregard for what several courts and rights organizations have stated and its failure to accept that its ally has murdered a journalist in broad daylight. The International Federation of Journalists, or IFJ, says that Israel was guilty of the crime and expressed deep disturbance over Israel's failure to conduct a probe into Palestinian journalist Abu Akleh's killing. The U.S., on the other hand, has not condemned this act, yet aside from saying there needs to be an independent investigation, raising questions about whether the U.S. is seeking the truth or to protect its ally.
Well, absolutely, the U.S. is guilty of supporting the regime. The U.S. is guilty from enabling the regime to engage in war crimes and crimes against humanity. The U.S. has been guilty of stealing money from the American people and giving it to the Israeli apartheid regime and giving them weapons and, in fact, looking the other way when Israel had developed nuclear weapons. But that's another story. But Israel's crimes and abuses against the Palestinians, against the Syrians, against Lebanon, against all sorts of countries and nations and peoples, the U.S. is the partner in crime that is responsible. And if the U.S. does not hold a moral standard and a very clear objectivity and a dedication to truth and justice, then the U.S. is showing that it has no dedication to truth and justice, but instead has a dedication to lies and crime.
The murder of Abu Akleh, which sparked global outrage, only adds to Israel's long list of atrocities against Palestinians. But that fury has yet to translate into any concrete measures, particularly by international bodies such as the UN Security Council. So far, several international organizations have provided evidence of Israel's brutality against Palestinians. UN resolutions have also been passed against Israel. Yet no one, including the United Nations Security Council, has used any of its tools to ensure its resolutions. Meanwhile, the International Criminal Court has ruled that it has a mandate to investigate the occupied territories and has accepted the Palestinians after they were granted non-member observer status at the UN. This comes despite Palestinians' inability to join the ICC, as Israel is not a member and Palestinians do not qualify as a sovereign state. A new document obtained through the Freedom of Information Act, which requires the full or partial disclosure of previously unreleased information and documents controlled by the U.S. government upon request, offers the first official confirmation of Pentagon's use of the secretive 127E authority in multiple countries. 127E is one of the several virtually unknown authorities granted to the Defense Department by Congress over the last two decades that allows U.S. commandos to conduct operations on the fringes of war and with minimal outside oversight. And now, the report indicated that American troops conducted at least 23 separate 127E programs across the world between 2017 and 2020. The document also shows that at least 14 127E programs were also active in West Asia and the Asia-Pacific regions as recently as 2020. Separately, Joseph Votel, a retired four-star Army general who headed both Special Operations Command and Central Command, which oversees U.S. military efforts in West Asia, confirmed the existence of previously unrevealed 127E so-called counter-terrorism efforts in Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, and Yemen.
The actual main purpose of U.S. Special Forces is to train and educate foreign fighters. And so they've done this in places that we would never, that the United States people would never support in Africa, Central America, and places like that. And in fact, we created the School of the Americas, which trained Central American people to how to torture people properly.
The 127E program, an obscure program that even U.S. lawmakers are not familiar with, one that allows American commandos to conduct counterterrorism operations by, with, and through foreign and irregular partner forces around the world. But all this only seems to be another term for waging a proxy war in another country through the use of local forces. The origins of the 127E program can be traced back to the earliest days of the U.S. war in Afghanistan, as commandos and CIA personnel sought to support militants there. Army Special Operations Command soon realized that it lacked the authority to provide direct payments to its new proxies and was forced to rely on CIA funding. This prompted a broader push by SOCOM to secure the ability to support foreign forces in so-called missions, a military corollary to the CIA's use of militia surrogates. First known as Section 1208, the authority was deployed in the early years of the Iraq invasion, according to a former senior defense official. It was ultimately enshrined in U.S. law under USC Title 10, Section 127E. But so far, the U.S. waging of proxy wars and its use of local forces to achieve its aims have been costly for countries targeted by Washington.
I guess I would use the example of the Philippines, where Duterte, who was a very right-leaning president, kicked the United States Special Forces out, even though they were operating in his space. In support of what he was doing, he kicked them out because he just didn't want that element in his country. American foreign policy is insane in every way that it possibly can be.
Critics in the U.S. have also contended that, due to a lack of oversight, 127E programs risk involving the United States in human rights abuses and entangling the U.S. in foreign conflicts unbeknownst to Congress and the American people. Former commanders, on the other hand, claim it is crucial to combating terrorism. But so far, the U.S.'s proxy wars in most countries where this program has been implemented, including West Asian nations like Syria, Yemen, Iraq, and Lebanon, have mostly been witnessing instability, which is more likely than not a direct result of the program and proxy elements and fighters. Racist policies are enshrined in Israeli law. However, one specifically denies 6 million Palestinians the right to return to the territory from which they were expelled only a few decades ago. The same law, however, permits Jews across the world to settle in any part of Palestine. Such practices, including the racial fragmentation of Palestine into zones of control, where half of the population enjoys full rights of citizenship denied to the non-Jewish half, have led most human rights groups and advocates to label Israel as an apartheid state. Meanwhile, Israel continuously and explicitly rejects international consensus and seems to have found strong support for their radical position from the Texas Republican Party in foreclosing any chance of a Palestinian state from ever being established.
Violence and instability are perhaps a good thing because violence implies that there will be resistance to this land grab and this denial of Palestinian rights. And as far as I'm concerned, the more resistance, the better. And Palestine needs to do resistance, and it needs its friends and allies to participate in resistance. I know that the policy of Iran and Syria and some other nations is to support Palestine in this kind of resistance. And in fact, it is now going in the direction that the entire world is saying, well, we're not going to listen to the United States anymore and NATO, for example, because the United States has now declared sanctions against so many countries that those countries are unifying amongst themselves to defy the United States. So we may be entering a new period when, unfortunately, violence, but resistance and most likely violent resistance is the only answer to the warmongers.
Though party platforms do not necessarily translate into government policy, critics cite the former U.S. President Donald Trump and the support enjoyed by Israel amongst powerful religious figures, as well as fringe elements in the U.S. society, to argue that the most extreme and rejectionist views about the apartheid have become normalized in U.S. politics. In further signs that support for Israel has morphed into an extremist position in the U.S., the Texas Republican Party has approved a platform that will make it illegal to create a Palestinian state in territories controlled by Israel. The platform, approved by 5,100 delegations in Houston, supports the prohibition of a Palestinian state within the so-called historical borders of Israel, as they claim it would jeopardize Israel's security. This platform, in essence, only lays the groundwork for further Israeli aggression and discrimination against Palestinians. Currently, as many as 12 million people reside in historic Palestine, but full rights are granted by the regime to Jews only, leaving the remaining 6 million non-Jews prone to various forms of racial discrimination depending on their place of residence. But does this type of platform represent the thinking of the U.S. as a whole when it comes to Palestinians, that they shouldn't have a right to their own land?
The United States has a long tradition of denying people their land rights and their homeland. We've done it to 500 nations in North America. So this is not at all surprising that they would say that the Palestinians should be denied their homeland. At the same time, the Zionists are immensely powerful and have powerful friends in the United States. So particularly in the power structure and the political structure,
All this poses some serious question about the future of Palestinians in light of the US and Israeli plots amid what seems to be international silence over the matter.
NATO leaders have held a meeting in the Spanish capital Madrid to discuss the expansion of the military alliance. NATO has formally invited Sweden and Finland to join the US-led military alliance. This is a historic expansion of the 30-member bloc. The military bloc, in a collective decision, approved the applications of Sweden and Finland a day after Turkey dropped its objections to the move. The decision will now be referred to the parliaments and legislators of the NATO member states for final ratification. The process is likely to move swiftly as the US-led military alliance seeks to build a bigger front against Russian President Vladimir Putin. Finland and Sweden applied to join NATO after Russia launched a special military operation in its neighbor Ukraine in February. NATO has officially declared Russia the most significant and direct threat to the security of its members. That marks a radical strategic shift spurred by the Russian military offensive against Ukraine.
It's the first time this new vision of Russia and its role in Europe is reflected in the strategic document of the Atlantic Alliance. Until recently, until this summit, NATO operated within the framework of the old strategy that was adopted back in 2010 at the Lisbon summit. And this strategy described Russia as a strategic partner of the NATO alliance. So we have a very decisive, a very radical shift in the approach.
And for the first time in its history, NATO has listed China as one of its strategic priorities, claiming that Beijing's ambitions challenge the Western bloc's interests, security, and values. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says China is not a threat, but the alliance needs to be clear-eyed about the challenges it represents.
This shift will definitely color many new initiatives and steps taken by NATO, including its defense posture, its deployment patterns, including its rhetoric. So it is a kind of very important formal step which nails down the new normal and which will have a significant impact of what NATO is likely to plan in years to come.
Both Russia and China have reacted angrily to the accusations and threats directed against them by the NATO. Beijing has slammed NATO's warning as completely futile. In their recent gathering, NATO leaders said Beijing's ambitions, policies, and close ties to Russia pose a challenge to the interests and security of the military alliance. China has accused the alliance of, quote, maliciously attacking and smearing the country. Its mission to the European Union said NATO claims that other countries pose challenges, but it is NATO that is creating problems around the world. The confrontational rhetoric comes as the U.S. is stepping up efforts to increase its military presence in Europe.
Apparently, the assumption is that with more Western weapons coming to Ukraine, with more military assistance reaching Kyiv, with more exhaustion on the Russian side, the course of the military conflict might shift in Ukraine's favor, and that with time, Ukraine's negotiating positions might get stronger.
U.S. President Joe Biden pledged more American troops, warplanes, and warships for Europe. The U.S. has pledged over $5 billion in U.S. aid, yet Ukraine is losing the war. It is now believed the U.S. and Western allies are deliberately protracting the war to station more weapons and troops across Europe and militarize the public discourse.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
فدعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
So, respected brothers and sisters, welcome back. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for joining us again. Again, we are here, inshallah, practicing the rules of Tanween and نون ساكين.
نور على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا مشرقا وهدى من الرحمن يهدينا به للصالحات وللمكارم والتقى.
So we finished the first important rule, okay, which was إظهار, which means to clearly pronounce the noon sound or the tanween sound, okay? Yes. So whenever the noon sakin or tanween approaches which letters?
Throat letters.
So how many letters are there in throat
six,
letters?
Six.
Six letters. Which letters? Hamza,
ha,
ha, kha, ayn, ghain. Hamza, ha, ha, kha, ayn, ghain. Yeah,
yes.
That
yes.
poem we have. So, that's great then. Let's go to the next ayahs of Surah An-Nazi'at. Let's finish this surah, inshallah. Then, with the next surah, we will go with the next rule, okay? Inshallah. So, okay. Ready?
Yes.
We were on ayah...
41,
yes. 40 we finished, now 41. Surah An-Nazi'at, chapter 30 of the Quran, page 584.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Okay, ayah 41, yes?
Yes.
فإن الجنة هي المأوى.
فَإِنَّ الْجَنَّةَ هِيَ الْمَأْوَى.
أحسن. Okay. Do we have any tanween or noon sakin?
No.
Whenever. Remember, whenever you have noon mushaddad, there is one noon sakin, then noon with fatha or noon kasra, whatever. Okay.
Yes.
So, but we do not have the rule izhar here.
Yes.
Okay. Let's continue.
يسألونك عن الساعة أيان مرساها.
يسألونك عن الساعة أيان مرساها.
Do we have any تنوين or نون ساكن?
No.
We have عن الساعة, but since نون is merged with the scene, okay, عن الساعة, so we have like ألف لام تعريف or ألف لام with شمسي letters. Or
yes.
sun letters, okay?
Yes.
Here, that noon is assigned with kasra. With Hamzatul Wasl, we have it. Approaches Hamzatul Wasl.
Yes.
So we assign it with kasra. So we do not have the rule izhar here because it has the kasra. Otherwise, we would have like any some other rules, okay? Maybe ikhfa.
Yes.
So,
فيما أنت من ذكراها.
فيما أنت من ذكراها.
فيما أنت من ذكراها.
فيما أنت من ذكراها.
أحسنتم. Do we have any noon or تنوين?
Yes.
We have two noon. Two noon is ساكن, right?
أنت
yes.
من.
أنت من. Do we have throat letters after?
Yes. No.
So we do not have Izhar here.
Yes.
Ila rabbika muntahaha.
Ila rabbika muntahaha.
Ahsantum. Do we have Nun Isakin?
No, yes.
Yes, we have Mun. Tahaha. But we have Ta. Ta is not throat letter, right?
Yes.
Good. So no Izhar.
إنما أنت منذر من يخشاها
إنما أنت منذر من يخشاها.
Do we have Nun Isakin or Tanween?
Yes.
Nun Isakin only we have, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. How many Nun Isakin?
أنت منذر من.
Okay. But we do not have throat letters after them, yes?
Yes.
So no ilhar. Here we have like one, two ikhfa, two idgham. Mm-hmm. In idgham, ikhfa, mun ikhfa, may idgham. But we do not have ilhar here, okay? Inshallah, we'll talk about idgham and ikhfa. The last ayah, which we have example here, okay? For ilhar.
Yes.
كأنهم يوم يرونها لم يلبثوا إلا عشية أو ضحاها.
كأنهم يوم يرونها لم يلبثوا إلا عشية أو ضحاها.
عشية Tanween.
Yes.
After Tanween?
Hamza.
Izhar, right?
Yes.
So let's repeat this ayah again together. One, two, three.
كأنهم يوم يرونها لم يلبثوا إلا عشية أو ضحاها.
أحسنتم. عشية أو ضحاها. Directly, you have to go to the letter Hamza. No changes to the tanween sound.
قلب بالحق تعلق وبغارح راء تألق يبكي يسأل خالقه فأتاه الوحي فأشرق اقرأ اقرأ.
Let's recite the Quran.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
So, Alhamdulillah, we finished Surah An-Nadhaat. The rule Izhar, Alhamdulillah. We had many examples, okay? Now we will go to Surah Al-Ghashiyah. So, everyone, brothers and sisters, if you have the Quran with you, Surah Al-Ghashiyah. So, in Surah Al-Ghashiyah, we have a lot of examples. A lot of examples, okay? For any of the rules. For any of the rules, we have a lot of examples. Especially, for example, for the rule Izhar, we have examples. For example, for the rule idgham, we have page 592. It is okay, page 592. So, Surah Al-Ghashiyah, page 592. Alhamdulillah, in this surah, the good thing is, the good point about this surah is that we have a lot of examples, okay, here. Examples for idgham, examples for idhar, okay, we have a lot. Maybe for ikhfa as well. Yes, for ikhfa as well, we have a lot of examples. So, let's go to this this surah, but before this surah, okay, before we go to this surah, let's study the next rule, okay, and then we'll go and apply the rules, all right? So,
yes.
The next rule is about iqlab, okay, iqlab. So, yeah?
Turning ba to mim?
Ba to mim?
Yeah, like its sound.
No, we are talking about tanween and nun sakin.
Yeah.
So whatever we do, whatever changes we bring, okay, whatever changes we make on
tanween
or nun sakin. No other letters. So iqlab means changing the tanween sound or nun sakin sound to
meme.
But when
you reach bay,
when tanween or nun sakin approaches the letter ba.
Yes.
Fawad was right, okay, to some extent. Not 100%, 50-50. So, now, the rule iqlab says, as it's clear, okay? Iqlab means?
Changing.
Alb. For example, changing, turning, okay?
Exchange.
Exchange, yes. Yes. Exchanging. Exchanging actually means tasrif. Okay, iqlab means turning something to something else.
Oh, that is for language, this is for Quran.
Okay, so iqlab means changing the sound. Actually, iqlab, the meaning, okay, the letter meaning, the meaning, okay, it means to turn over, to change something to something else, okay? But when it comes to Quranic lessons, tajweed lessons, okay, iqlab means to change the sound of tanween or nun sakin to half meme, next to meme, kind of sound, okay? That sound, okay? It happens when meme sakin as well we have. Whenever we have meme sakin as well, we'll study inshallah. Whenever you have meme sakin plus ba, again, half meme, not complete meme. Okay, a ghunna sound. It is noon, but changes to half meme. How? So your lips, when you say meme, the lips touch, yes? The lips touch each other, right?
Yes.
Like they are on the top of each other. But whenever you say, whenever you apply iqlab rule, okay? The lips do not touch each other, okay? Just there is a little space, okay? Just like a little space for the air to blow, okay, out. Or, for example, a paper. You put a paper, okay, between your lips. A little paper, no, a paper. Anything. Just a paper, okay? Put a paper, okay, between your lips, okay? I'm trying to say meme, okay? I'm saying between. Between. So between, okay, your lips. Like this.
Meme.
Yes.
But don't...
They should not touch each other, not fixed on each other, okay?
Soft
No. Soft meme sound. That's great. Now we'll go to... For example, the word min, nun sakin, right? Ba'd. So iqlab is applied only with the letter ba. We have only in iqlab, we have one letter. What letter?
Ba.
How many letters we had in ilhar?
Six
letters. So how many letters do we have in iqlab?
One letter.
And that is?
Ba.
Ba.
That's what I said.
Okay. So, now, how do we apply, for example, in the word min ba'di?
Min ba'di.
Ba'di.
Min ba'di.
Min ba'di.
Min ba'di how?
Min ba'di.
Min ba'di.
Min ba'di.
Yes.
Mim, if it is mim,
no,
changes
no,
complete.
Mim ba'di.
Mim.
The noon changes to little meme sound. Mim okay.
A half meme sound.
Half meme. How?
Mim
ba'di. We say it. Let's apply it.
Mim ba'di.
Mim ba'di.
A noon sound, but in the end, it goes to meme.
Look. Yes. Yeah. Half meme sound.
Yeah. Mim ba'di.
Mim ba'di.
Yes.
Mim ba'di.
Yeah. Fawad does it look so nicely. Okay. That's a good one. Good trick, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, pull your lips, okay? That's a nice one. Okay, thank you, Fawad, for telling me that. For example, the next word. Fa-an-bat-na. 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 Nun sakin. Fa-an-bat-na. Nun sakin. Then ba. How do you say this?
Fa'ambatna.
Fa'ambatna. Fiha nabatan. I think it's like this, yeah. Fa'ambatna. Fa'ambatna. Right, okay. Thanks to IRIB English Radio and also Sevier International Schools. But first and foremost, thanks to Allah Almighty. So, let's recite a salawat. We'll be back, inshallah.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil faraja.
Let's recite the Quran. A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آيات
وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
Cultural news Social news Scientific news Artistic news With the light.
There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day since the menu largely includes local flavors. A young British artist has found an incredible way to create art using not pen or paper, but typewriter. Symbols and letters are turned into complex drawings by this 25-year-old's adept fingers, gaining him attention online. London-based James Cork, who studied architecture, used to draw portraits. But that all changed when he discovered his now signature tool, the typewriter, in 2014. He says the idea came to his mind when he came across Paul Smith, an artist from the 1920s, who produced similar work. Initially, Cook thought it impossible, but he gave it a try. Now, after 8 years, he can draw complex images from Hollywood star Tom Hanks to the London Eye or the Millennium Bell. But while his works appear flawless to viewers, Cook says it never gets any easier and that it's always a challenge for him.
There's something really satisfying about kind of using this sort of limited palette of... You basically have about 44 keys on a typewriter on average. So you've got to kind of puzzle piece those letters, numbers, punctuation marks together to make a drawing.
Recently, online interest has encouraged Cook to pursue his passion. People donate their typewriters to Cook, who gives these machines a second life. He now has a collection of more than 40 typewriters dating from the early 20s.
Colombia's long hunt for a fabled Spanish ship, San Jose Galleon, that sank centuries ago, comes to an end. But the mission leads to two more nearby shipwrecks filled with treasures.
We have found two additional ships, one ship that is from the colonial period and another that, from the point of view of preliminary analysis, corresponds to the Republican period of our history. We also have related vessels, around a dozen similar boats, that will be located by our Navy.
The colonial-era vessels were found near Colombia's Caribbean port of Cartagena. A remotely operated vehicle reached 900 meters beneath to capture the shipwrecks and treasures inside them. San Jose Galleon sank in a deadly battle against English warships in 1708, taking with it billions in treasure. The Colombian president says the findings will be preserved and protected until extraction is done completely. The riches will then be displayed in museums.
Colombian scientists managed to reproduce an endangered species of frog, bringing it back from the brink of extinction. The scientists were able to reproduce 29 specimens of Lehman's poison frog after years of investigations and experiments using a lab built specifically for this species. They have released the frogs into the Colombian Pacific region with the hope of starting its repopulation.
We observe how the frogs adapt to this ecosystem, which is theirs, but it is a constant monitoring. And the idea is that of these first 29 frogs at the moment, there are many more little frogs, and now we can tell the world that they are not in danger of extinction.
The scientists, however, warn that this particular species of frog is very difficult to reproduce or maintain under human care. They are also worried about the illegal trade of the frogs, which has already played a key role in pushing the rare species towards extinction. Colombia is home to over 700 frog species, more than any other country in the world except Brazil.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Ortman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity. A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass-bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass-bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular, the engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock, has been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
The White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40 millimeter tempered glass. With soaring fuel prices, the importance of solar-powered vehicles is on the rise. Now a Kashmiri math teacher has gone viral for creating a car powered by solar energy. The car, which is fully covered with solar panels, uses sunlight to charge its battery. The vehicle also has a braking system that regenerates power to its batteries. The inventor of the car, Bilal Ahmed, says he has spent about $19,000 for his project and has not used external funds.
It was my dream to invent a solar car for the people of Kashmir. It took me 13 years to complete my dream. I'm thankful to the Almighty I succeeded in this project.
Bilal says he has built the car manually and without any automation. He hopes to put his fully automatic car into mass production to create jobs for local people.
Just like humans and animals, plants get sick too. But what do you do with an ill plant? An Indian man has found an answer to that. He has opened an emergency room only for plants in Amritsar, a city in India's Punjab state. A tax officer and his wife have set up the Pushpa Tree and Plant Hospital. In Pushpa, they have expert biologists and tree lovers on hand to provide the so-called sick patients with their essential nutrients. The clinic aims to treat any and every disease and even has an emergency vehicle on call for unhealthy trees around the city. The officer's wife says, just as we humans bleed, breathe and need cures, plants also bleed, breathe and need cures.
We provide approximately 32 various services for plants and trees, like if there's a nail in the tree, how to take out that nail. Deep poisoning of the trees. Yes, you heard it right. There are people who poison the trees. Again, if the tree is not bearing fruits, there's an attack of mealybugs or another insects. That's also cured here. If the trees or plants are dying and you're unable to take care of them, even that problem is sorted out.
Only a month into the hospital's operation, Rohit Mehra and his team of 20 volunteers have already received more than 300 queries. The hospital is also completely free of charge. Staff at the National Zoo of Cuba in the capital city of Havana are celebrating a new arrival of a rare baby white rhinoceros. The little calf, named Al, quickly became popular among other animals in the park after he was born. He is part of a conservation program that will add to a gene bank for future breeding. Al is the second white rhinoceros to be born in captivity in 18 years. The park is home to 8 white rhinos and 4 black ones. Zoo staff say the park has one of the largest exhibits of this mammal among zoos in Latin America. White rhinos are endangered species and their population has dwindled due to illegal poaching and environmental destruction.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.